Welcome to AMA Edgewise. I'm Dave Summers. AMA Edgewise is brought to you by the American Management Association. Transformational new growth remains the holy grail for many organizations, but a deep understanding of how great business models are made can provide the key to unlocking that growth. In a new book, Seizing the White Space, Business Model Innovation for Growth and Renewal, Mark Johnson presents a practical approach to fuel game-changing growth through business model innovation. Mark W. Johnson is co-founder and chairman of InnoSight, a strategic innovation consulting and investment company with offices in Massachusetts, Singapore, and India. Welcome to the program, Mark.
Thank you, Dave. It's great to be here.
To begin with, what is white space in general, and how do you use it in this book?
Dave, I wanted to make sure, first of all, to give a term of hope and opportunity. There's something inside our organization that we can still do that's uncharted territory that I think quickly converts to places where we can go, markets and areas where we could take the organization. But I wanted to term white space as an area of the unknown, which requires not only going to that geographic location, but needing to have a fundamentally different vehicle to get there, a different business model to be able to seize that opportunity. So think not only about a market opportunity, but that a whole different business model would be necessary to be able to seize that opportunity.
Now, in the book, you write about white space within, but then you talk about white space beyond and white space between.
White space within is the ability to transform an existing market that you're already in through business model change. And the examples are the following: Dow Corning, a silicon manufacturer, realizes that it's facing disruption at the low end. It's a high-tech service that's combined with selling just basic silicone. They realized they could do a low-end play. It's selling the corn instead of the Fritos, but it required a different business model to just embrace going after a commodity business. So Dow Corning seized the white space within, meaning it didn't go outside of its market. It found an opportunity within its core market to change the game through business model innovation. The other example is Hilti, a power tool manufacturer, who also faced commoditization of its power tools, but it was a brand differentiated product company, and it was able to change the game within its core market by offering to customers a services model. Instead of selling the individual tools, they would lease a fleet of power tools to construction sites and provided this end-to-end service to really increase the convenience construction sites were looking for. With this new model of fleet managed program, they provided convenience to the customer. White space beyond is going after an emerging market, but recognizing that to go after that emerging market, it's not enough just to change the packaging and to hire a few indigenous people. That oftentimes to really reach those villages or those even middle of the pyramid areas, you're going to have to not only change the product and packaging, but change the business model because there's a whole different way of distribution. Microfinancing might be necessary, and putting those together may be a business model change to reach those markets. And then the last white space between is really about industry upheaval. So whether we talk about what's happening in energy and media, it's major discontinuities in an industry because of technological disruption, because of market change on an industry-wide scale that lead to the opportunity to do things different. A classic example is the internet really changed the game for newspapers. Problem is newspapers went online, but they didn't go online with a new business model. They took the existing newspaper model and they just put it online. Yet there's been real opportunity, as we know, from the likes of Google with its new advertising model, what Huffington Post has done, what Craigslist has done on the classified side, that there really were opportunities to seize content over the internet, but you'd have to think differently from a whole business system perspective.
And so it does require moving away or at least thinking differently from the core.
Oh, absolutely. Much of the management doctrine over the last 20 years has been stick to the core. Don't venture out much past opportunities that are outside of the core space, but still can be seized through an existing business model. So it leaves open the areas of opportunity where a technology coupled with a new business model you could create with that technology could provide whole new areas of growth. The problem is most companies don't understand their business model or how to create a new one. Therefore, they've gone into white space that really needed a new business model, but they didn't change the business model. They failed, and that led them to say, we ventured out too far. So in order to move away from the core to address white space, you have to go with the right business model.
Mark, in today's post-recession times, can you explore white space? Is it too risky?
Not only can you explore it, but it's essential. The need to explore white space is really the need to invest in your future. Peter Drucker once said, every business has a theory. He's basically saying a business model. And he said, sooner or later, that theory no longer works. Either you leave the market leaves you, or both. Whether we're in recessionary times, post-recessionary times, or in booming times, we always want to be thinking about the future. Companies, even if they are trying to address what's happened with the recession, must make some investment, even if modest, in being able to look at places that startups, other entrepreneurs are looking at as opportunities to create new customer value. So I think it's an and statement. We need to address the core. We have to deal with the post-recession period. But at the same time, even if it's a modest percentage of our discretionary innovation resources, we need to take 2, 3, 5, 10% and invest not only in R&D for technology, but R&D for business, so that we can look to the future about opportunities that not only require a new transformational technology, but a new business model wrapped around it.
Okay. So what is your definition of this new business model?
It's any way to represent how value gets created for the customer, how it gets delivered to the customer through the resources and processes of the business, and how value gets captured for the company in the form of profit. So a business model is a way to explain why a business is in business, which is to create and deliver value.
In your book, you also mentioned four elements critical to a successful model. Can you talk a little bit about those?
What we've done is give four boxes that represent this value creation, capture, and delivery definition I just gave you. And the first around creation is we have to start with a customer who has an important job in her life she's trying to get done. If a company or an individual can address that person's job, if it's an important job, unsatisfied, and they can deliver a solution, an offering, product, or service that's well-suited for that job in a repeatable way and do it at a reasonable price, then you have the first box of my model, which is customer value proposition. The second part of the model is to think about it now from the company side, value capture, a fundamental way to describe how profit is done over and over again, called profit formula. It's a way of distilling a profit and loss statement or set of financial statements into the essence of how the company thinks about the way it repeatedly creates value for itself. Things like gross margins are often the proxy for so many different things. The revenue model, am I selling just the blade or am I selling also the razor? How do I think about how I generate my revenues? Then there's also the issue of cost structure. I not only need to cover the cost to produce that product, but I have to cover the overhead and the infrastructure that's part of that. And then the final of the profit formula is, what's my capacity as an organization to generate volume? If I'm a discount retailer, I generate a lot more volume of inventory through my stores than if I'm a traditional department store. And it's the fact that I can generate more volume, even though it's at lower markup, that allows me to make more profit in the industry than any department store. Discount retailers have 3/4 of the market cap of that industry.
Can you give us an example of that?
Yes. So a great example here is many computer manufacturers like Digital Equipment Corporation were disrupted by the personal computers. Their challenge was not the technology of personal computers. The essence was they are making many computers at 60% gross margins, and they're selling them for $500,000. Personal computer comes in at $4,000 or less, and the margins on those computers is 40%, moving quickly to 20%. And then the final piece of the model is how you deliver value. It's an identification of the critical resources and critical processes that are used to deliver to the customer and to deliver to the company.
From what you described, I can understand how you might get this information, but how do you move from one thing to another? Is that a team effort at senior management level?
Without a doubt, whenever you start talking about the fundamental way a company creates and delivers value, you're dealing with the essence of a business unit's way of doing things. And if senior management's not involved, it's not going to happen. So it is a team effort, both in terms of the sponsorship that's needed from senior executives, as well as the resources and processes of those that are going to be chartered to actually make this happen. The other thing that's very important is companies will need to understand what is their current way of creating value. They have to get back to the fundamentals of their own business and not just deal with what's been put in place defining a business model, which is the rules and the norms and the way that the company just operates day after day, not thinking about what is the real definition of value creation. So they're going to have to understand how they create value for themselves to be able to have this team effort to go into a new space and be ready to do something different. It's not only about designing the different, but if you don't know from where you sit, it's going to be very hard to manage, do I really have something different going on or not?
So obviously communication becomes critical during this entire process.
Absolutely. And the communication vehicle that I think is essential is to go into the white space with a framework, a way of thinking about how we are creating something new. The essential element is defining how you create value for the customer and yourself and documenting it in a very simple way that I describe in the book. And then being very clear about what are the critical resources and processes, not all of them, but the critical ones that you need to invest in that may be different than what you've been doing in the core. You know, sometimes going after the new means letting go of the core capabilities, many of them at least, to be able to do something new for the sake of getting a new customer who has a new job they're trying to get done.
Mark, let's talk a little bit about the management challenges. Could you go deeper on these for us?
Well, companies operate the core business through rules, norms, and metrics. You hire new people. They're not familiar with the organization. How do you get them in line to do what the organization needs to get done on an ongoing basis? You give them rules, norms, and metrics so that whether people understand the business model or not, everybody can follow the rules. The problem is those rules and the ways of working together become very deeply ingrained in the organization. And because of that, they lead to a number of different challenges. So I can give you this by way of example.
Okay.
One challenge is failure to allocate resources. Digital Equipment Corporation, because of its rules about how it makes money with its customer and how it serves its customer with many computers, ultimately fails to allocate resources to invest in any real way to take the personal computer and commercialize it into any market. Because they're operating under a certain set of rules, they never invest real resources beyond due product development. The second challenge is you take your existing business model and you leverage it as the new opportunity arises. A great example there is digital photography was actually created by Kodak in 1975. It took them almost 30 years to commercialize that product. The reason for that is, first of all, when it first was discovered, management said, that's nice, but don't tell anybody about it, realizing that digital imaging would completely cannibalize their silver halide film business. But they were able to come up with a camera in 1990. It was called the DS100. The problem is that would have cost you $30,000. Because they were thinking of this camera as having to compete with its 35 millimeter film business and try to get the quality of the camera as good, rather than think about where are there new applications in whole new business models for digital imaging, such as in our phones or on toys. They crammed it into the core Kodak model, and as a consequence, it took them till the year 2000 and beyond before they actually made any real inroads into digital cameras. And then the third challenge is you don't have the patience to allow new business models to develop. Any whole new business system takes time. and it has to go through a number of iterations before you get it right. Most new companies that are successful today didn't get their model right the first time. It took years. It took a number of changes to take place before they ultimately got the right model. eBay started out as an exchange for Pierre Omidar's wife to trade Pez dispensers. It's a lot different business today than it was back then. It started in a very simple application, and it made its way up market since then. So those are the three challenges companies face. They fail to allocate resources. They have trouble getting out from their existing business model. And when they do develop new business models, they don't give it the time it needs to develop the right way. And the reason for that is corporations are in business to grow and grow fairly fast. And they're operating under an existing set of rules and metrics that prevent them from really creating a whole new business system.
What are the risks, and how can you minimize these risks?
You got to recognize that nobody can in advance determine what this ultimate successful business model is going to look like. You got to think big, but you got to start small. You got to start in a foothold market, learning from a customer what value they really want and how you can repeatedly deliver that value in a small scale way. And if you will start small, just like you're doing an experiment, except make it transactional in the market, then you can manage the risk. The problem is, if you're a $30 billion company, your management team wants to find $3 billion if it's going to grow 10% year over year. So when a business model opportunity comes about and you say, well, I want to give myself the time so that I can find this market, and you're only going to deliver $1 million the first year, it doesn't do anything to recognize the corporate mandate to find $3 billion of new growth. But that's the dilemma companies have to face. They have to move away from the short-sightedness of Wall Street expectations and invest for the future 5, 6, 7, 8 years from now, and be willing to allow something to incubate and grow in the right way. If they do it that way, then really they are managing the risk, because they'll see the results either in the positive or in the negative sooner. And if the results are in the negative, they can cut off the effort much sooner than if they try to grow these businesses way too fast.
And I would think that during this process, they can test and refine the business model.
Absolutely. In fact, the research shows that new companies with new business models change that business model in a fundamental way 4 times before they get it right. So changing your model is critical. And it has to be in a test and learn approach. So it gives you the ability to determine what is going to be the ultimate right model that you can scale into a large business.
Okay, what about competitors? You've identified a white space. Isn't it likely they've identified a white space as well?
Not really. The power of true white space opportunities is that they're usually not replicated anytime soon. A great example here is FedEx. They discovered a job that's been around for a very long time. There has been, since the beginning of time, people that said, I need this package as fast as possible. If it can be overnight, that would be best. So FedEx, in the package delivery business, realized that job, and they came up with a whole new business around a fleet of aircraft, point to point, to be able to achieve a job that wasn't getting done in the white space within. It was an existing market, but nobody had cracked the code on how do you deliver packages overnight in a reliable way. It was a white space, but it required integrating the business in a whole different way to be successful. And because it took a whole different business system to be able to deliver overnight in a repeatable way, UPS and the Postal Service took over 10 years to come up with anything close. The business system idea is very hard to replicate. The same in furniture. No one has replicated IKEA's model of being able to provide hip-looking furniture that's still low cost, delivered in a very efficient manner. IKEA has organized itself around a critical job that's the white space to other furniture retailers and manufacturers, all because their business system is so different than any other furniture manufacturer.
Mark, one last question. Are there any unique qualities a leader has to have to pursue this type of approach to innovation?
Yes. They have to have vision. They have to be ready to say, my business may be obsolete 10 years from now or 15 years from now, and I need to be looking out to the future, not just 2 or 3 years from now than traditional strategic planning, but 5, 6, 7, 8 years from now. And the businesses that are going to succeed in terms of those value propositions customers have that far out have to have the patience to let teams pursue them with the right business rhythm. That's going to be a lot different than the core. So they have to have a quality that allows them to recognize that we're going to continue to operate and execute for the short term, but we're also going to invest for the long term, not only in terms of R&D, but in terms of business models. And we're willing to bring people over to this new effort and allow them to do what they need to do and give them the patience to get done what they need to get done. That takes a leader who has not only an operational execution mindset and a strategic mindset, but a creative mindset, a willingness to look to the future to create whole new business systems.
Today, we've had Mark W. Johnson, author of the new book, Seizing the White Space, Business Model Innovation for Growth and Renewal. Mark, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you, Dave.
With only an internet connection and a browser, you can tap into AMA's world-class training. The American Management Association is bringing live instructor-led training right to your desktop. AMA's new virtual seminar offering features a live virtual format that is highly interactive and very user-friendly. It's taught by the same expert, world-class faculty that run our classroom sessions, and the high-quality content has been specially engineered to run in an online format. You get real-time online interaction with your course leader and your fellow attendees. You will receive a USB headset so that you can not only listen but talk to your classmates and your instructor. So take advantage of these offerings, enhance your career journey by building your skills, and you don't have to take any time away from the office. For more information about AMA's virtual seminar offering, visit our website at www.amanet.org. Thanks for taking us along. I'm Dave Summers, and you've been listening to AMA's Edgewise.